Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Hey, thanks for downloading the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. Nice clicking. You're about to hear a rambling and frank conversation with the brilliant author, Thomas Frank. His latest book, Listen Liberal, which I've highly recommended, is now out in paperback. And it's the opportunity for us to talk about politics, the Democratic Party in the era of Trump, and we have special political therapy for our listener and subscriber, John Zweibel, who lives in Hawaii. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins podcast. And it's made possible by people like John Zweibel and David Radcliffe just renewed his annual subscription. Jane Williams is a monthly subscriber as well. You're invited to join them. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. No matter what device you use, there's a menu button at the top. You click on that, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page, and there you have options. Pick one, and I will be grateful for your support. How did we get here? We had an election last year, and everybody thought it was Hillary's to lose. And then she did. People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin. Run, but you sure can't hide. Political Motown from 1970. And I, boy, and I, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me, and I'll set you free. The Temptations' Ball of Confusion opens our podcast today as we are joined once again by the estimable Thomas Frank. He has been described as prescient, and we'll find out more about that. But he is in the throes of an international book tour. He's been in Australia cuddling a little baby kangaroo. He was in Scandinavia. I'm not sure what he cuddled there. And now he is in the beautiful city of Cleveland, Ohio, where the Republicans held their convention last summer, and he is peddling the paperback edition of his powerful book, Listen Liberal, subtitled Or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. And this is a book that I have freely recommended to listeners and to friends since I read it last year. Tom, always a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome back to the podcast.
Mr. Collins, it's good to be here.
And how are you holding up on this international tour? It sounds grueling. I mean, Australia to Scandinavia. Did you go over the top or under the bottom?
So it's kind of amusing. The last place I was in Australia was Adelaide. Mm-hmm. So on the Antarctic Ocean, and then I got on a plane and flew to Washington over the Indian Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and over, you know, by way of Abu Dhabi, and then flew to Washington. I was there for one day, less than 24 hours, got on another plane and flew to Iceland.
Ouch.
And then to Oslo, Norway. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was
you were home just long enough to change your thrift shop clothing collection for the trip.
That's right. From the summer wardrobe to the winter. That's exactly what I did.
And American blues musicians, are you more popular outside the United States?
I don't know about that. So there are some huge differences. By the way, the answer to your question about how I lived through it is they make these special vitamins in Australia that you put in water and they fizz up and they, you know, they're like they become a kind of like a fruit juice.
Yeah.
You know, like a punch.
Is that the product called Airborne that's like a fizzy?
It's similar to that, but more powerful. It's called Baraka.
Uh-huh.
And anyhow, so I've been consuming that.
What is tube it? Is the active ingredient Vegemite? Because I think that stuff would put me to sleep if I ever ate it.
Well, what can I say? Look, in these countries, what's different between there and here is they don't have the ban on people on the left speaking on, you know, national TV or national radio. It happens all the time in those countries. Mm-hmm. And so I will often be, when I'm in Australia or Canada or England or France or Scandinavia, I'll be on their national radio or their national TV. And they don't think it's strange to have someone with my views on TV and radio. Mm-hmm. And all of these countries are very curious about Trump, how this happened, because for two reasons. First of all, they're afraid that he's going to get them into a war. You know, Australia has been at our side in every stupid war we've gotten into.
That's right.
And they are afraid that this guy is going to blunder into something. And I mean, they were in the Vietnam War, you know. And
I mean, last week it looked like he was ready to declare war on our ally Germany, just there over a handshake in the Oval Office. I'm not going to shake hands with that broad.
He's such a dope. The other thing is that every one of these countries has a right wing movement that is on the rise, and in some cases is, look at France, you know, Marine Le Pen, who is peddling the exact same thing as Trump, mm-hmm. Is doing extremely well in the polls. So in all of these countries, they're afraid of that, too. They can see that. And in Scandinavia, everywhere in Europe, the same thing is happening. The left parties are lost. They're clueless. They don't know what they stand for. You know, they've all embraced Clintonism somewhere down the line. You know, the centrism, the, mm-hmm. The third way, all that crap. And they all believe in this sort of creative class ideology that I mock in Listen Liberal.
Yeah.
And they're all being destroyed by the right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw what happened in Holland the other day, the Netherlands, where it's true that the far right candidate did not win outright.
He got 13%.
Yeah, but the other right-wing party mm-hmm. basically parroted his issues and took them away from him. But what's really amazing is the Social Democratic Party there got wiped out.
But two things about that, and comment back if you will. One is, I believe the American media exaggerated the prospects of Geert Wilders actually being able to win and form a government. Secondly, they have buried the surge of the Green Party in Holland that occurred against this nationalist backdrop, and the mainstream conservative party did show gains. Basically, they rode the coattails of the extremist. I do think that the Green Party increased from 4 to 14 seats, and that is, I think, being underplayed here because, you know, Geert Wilders has weird hair
Much more interesting. Yeah, that's right. But the wipeout of the Social Democrats is also huge. This is historically – this is the party that built, you know, the modern European welfare state, all that stuff. And it's happening everywhere, by the way. It's happening in all of these countries. So there's that. And these people – you know, obviously America is considerably farther down the road to the right than any of the European countries. And so they are fascinated, the Australians in particular, fascinated by how we got here and what they can do to avoid, you know, going down the same path. And so that's why they're interested in what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now so it is very different. So there's enormous audiences in all these places. And I am on the national radio and TV in these places where I come back here to America, and that simply never happens anymore. I used to be on mm-hmm. all the time in this country, but not any longer.
Well, and I'm grateful it makes time for me. I don't have to hear you say, oh, I'm in the Fox limo. I can't talk to you now.
Yeah. Do you remember those days? But I've actually seen your studio. I've actually been in the hidden, the secret studio.
Well, I moved to an even more secret location. So now you don't have a need to know, and you don't. So, Tom, one of the reasons I reached out to you while you were down under is that I got this SOS email from one of my favorite listeners. His name is John Zweibel. I think he made some money in tech here in California, and then moved to Kauai in Hawaii.
Yeah, nice place.
He is really struggling because he's a Bernie Sanders progressive, and he is trying to join ranks with the Indivisible movement in his area. But he is frustrated on a daily basis by the Clinton supporters who haven't let go. And let me read a couple of passages from his lengthy email here. He said, there are guys in the Democratic Party who think that they are going to heal the Clinton-Sanders divide by just being nice. Well, I'm having none of it. About every third day, I find myself in a defensive crouch writing about the divide. And I find myself defending Susan Sarandon, because when I watch her Chris Hayes interview for which she was pilloried, she never said she wanted Trump over Clinton. She said she would wait and see what happened. Hayes was trying to sabotage the Sanders campaign at that point, especially when he threw up his hands in fake surprise that Sarandon wouldn't admit defeat before the convention. Later, he says, I really need some help here. How do I stop this? I find I don't trust the people from the Democratic Party I work with daily. We've been able to successfully organize our own little Indivisible group, and we've set up some pretty good digital outreach. But I feel like Mao in World War II, and I think I need to worry about the longer goal. So what advice do you have for struggling Democrats today? When I first got his email, my first reaction was to recommend your book. But if you could, I'll play Dr. Phil here because I look a little more like him, and you can be the therapist of your choice. But what do you say to these struggling Democrats, particularly after the establishment figures, the superdelegates, once again intervened to block Keith Ellison from becoming chair of the DNC and put their preferred candidate, Tom Perez, in instead? That was a signal that really distressed a lot of progressives.
Yeah. Look, Peter, political parties have factions. There's nothing strange about it, and they tangle with each other, and then at the end of the day they get together and try to win, right? But they do have factions, and there's nothing strange about that. I mean, look, you and I are old enough to remember when the Clinton faction first took over in the in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, and all the other factions that they defeated and then suppressed. And I do mean suppressed. I mean, the Democratic Leadership Council that is gone now, but the people who are, you know, the leading members of that all occupy positions of power and authority in Washington, in, you know, within the Democratic Party, in journalism, all over the place. These people don't just give up. So there has to be a fight. But let me stoke this a little bit more. The Clinton faction, you know, sold itself to us for years now, decades, as the winning faction. They're the ones that would win national elections. They would give us, you know, they would surrender on principles. They would sell us out in all sorts of different ways, triangulate, you know, move to the center, do all those things. Remember, Bill Clinton was very his admirers were very proud of him for doing that, for what would you call it? Like offending the left, you know, hammering the left. That was a moment of pride for his supporters back in the 1990s.
Well, they were determined. They were determined to either marginalize or eliminate from the party people who were against the death penalty, because that's not popular.
Oh, there's a whole list of things.
And people who were against war.
The critical thing, but it goes further than that. I mean, they deregulated Wall Street for Pete's sake, Pete.
Hey, thanks, Tommy.
they did all sorts of crazy, stupid things. They got rid of welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
I do.
They sold out the party of Roosevelt in all these different ways, and on the grounds that they would win national elections. And what's the first thing that happened? They lost Congress, and they have never really got it back. They got it back for a couple years in the last decade, but that's it. And now you the Democratic Party, after following the lead of these people, is in a state of historic defeat. You know, it's not just that Hillary lost; it's across the board. You know, they're wiped out. And this is the faction that told us that by selling out our principles, selling out what the Democratic Party stood for, that they would win. And in fact, they delivered defeat. One more thing. Part of Clinton's war on the Democratic Party was his the hatred of the term populism. Do you remember this? The Democratic Leadership Council hated the word populism. And any you know, hint or taint of populism had to be eliminated from the Democratic Party. And people like me argued at the time, it's like, well, look, remember this is in What's the Matter with Kansas. Look at what's happening. The Republicans are this, you know, incredible fake populist, you know, machine, and they are going to eat your lunch. Mm-hmm. They are going to pretend to be Democrats, and they're going to pretend to care about average people and pretend to be against hierarchy and aristocracy, and they're going to win. And they did, and they did, and they did. And just the other day, I picked up the newspaper, and here's Donald Trump laying a wreath at the grave of Andrew Jackson, founder of the Democratic Party. Yes. I mean, there is no better illustration than that. It's like you can't deny it now, guys. But here's the thing. They are denying it, and they won't. First, they didn't, you know, they denied it was happening. No, the working class will never go over to the Republicans. Now it's happened. And they say, well, there's nothing we can do about that. Those people are the sort of, you know, vulgar, primitive lunkheads. You know, they're so deeply racist. They can never, we can never win them back, and it's folly to even try. And look, these people are going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming to victory. They simply don't, they don't want to win. I mean, if winning means becoming the party of Roosevelt again, they don't want to win.
That's a stunning indictment. I pause to let it sink in.
Good. Now, shall I tell you about that baby kangaroo I saw in Australia?
No,
it was really cute.
But I do want to find out how the Washington Post determined that Tom Frank is prescient, and that now is a front page or a front cover blurb on the paperback edition of Listen Liberal.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's easy because the book is about the Democrats becoming a party of this sort of upper class element. And I mean, that's now, I think, apparent to everybody in the country. Although last year they wouldn't, you know, when the book came out, they wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't acknowledge. Well, hell, they still won't. anyhow, that's what's prescient about it. And, it, you know, that they're, you know, they're totally vulnerable to an attack from the populist right. You know, the working class has a reason for walking away from the Democratic Party. Also, I really emphasize the trade issue in Listen Liberal. And lo and behold, that turns out to be the club with which Donald Trump, you know, beat Hillary to the ground. That one issue, that was the real killer. You know, and that's why they say that. Here's the funny thing, though. They said the same thing about What's the Matter with Kansas. And they said the same thing about my book before that, One Market Under God. Do you remember this one? It was about like the Wall Street's fake populism of Wall Street. And it was right before the bursting of the dot-com bubble. Remember this?
I missed that book. I found out about you through What's the Matter with Kansas. That was my gateway to Frank.
What I'm saying, Peter, is that it keeps happening, and it doesn't make any difference. And you might say, why is this, Tom? I mean, do you have a crystal ball or something? No, I'm just really cynical. And you know, I'm just really cynical, and I always imagine the worst, and it keeps happening.
Now, have you done any Google searches to see who else has been tagged prescient by the Washington Post? And is this some coded, you know, negative inference? He's prescient. Yeah, he's prescient. You know, we can't handle people.
I don't know.
Like
it's a curious compliment. I mean, it's a very nice thing for them to say.
And it's going to sell some books at the airport.
I don't think I have ever seen one of my books at the airport.
Really?
I don't think I have ever.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed to hear that.
You know why? It's also the same reason they never have my books at Costco. Or there's all sorts of chains that won't carry my stuff. Books a Million. I think, you know, which is a Southern chain.
So you're a blacklisted American writer here?
No. It's really simple because I'm too controversial.
I see.
You know, they don't carry it. They might carry it there now. I shouldn't badmouth people. I mean, in the past, this was a problem. Maybe this one is different.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So yeah. I got a hold of the afterword that is the fresh addition to the paperback version of Listen Liberal. And I need to take issue with your opening couple of sentences here. You say, and then came the deluge. The right-wing flood that overswept the Democrats in 2016 was a surprise to everyone. Now, Tom,
we still have
the outstanding $5 wager from August 1st after you'd been to both conventions.
Oh, and did I bet on Hillary?
You did, and I won.
Yeah.
I predicted reluctantly that Trump would win. And so the surprise to everyone.
Prescience comes with an asterisk. No, I believed the polls. I thought she was going to win. But, you know, to my credit, Mr. Collins, did you see the Guardian essay that ran on the election night? Did you see this?
Yes, I did.
Where it's about the Trump victory, and it was written a week in advance.
Oh, really?
So, well, you can tell by reading it. It was highly polished, had all these links mm-hmm. and all this stuff, and they published it about 10 minutes after the AP called the election for Trump because it had been written the week before by
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And to write that, now, admittedly, it was designed to be held until he had actually won the election, so it's all written in the past tense. But I did have to write it in advance, and in order to write it, I had to persuade myself that he was going to win. We never talked about this.
Wow.
But I did do that, and it was one of the creepiest weeks of my life. I was in Florida visiting my brother, and my brother lives in Palm Beach, right down the street. You know, Trump lives there.
Yeah.
Or Trump has a house there, I should say. And, I mean, this spectacular, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's a country club, I guess.
He got it for $8,000 cash down, yes.
No.
He did.
$8,000?
He got 110% loan to buy the property, and all he had to do was put up $8,000 in cash.
Dude, I would do that.
So would I. I mean, I could do that on a credit card. Okay, so I interrupted you. So you're in Florida.
So I was in Florida trying to write this story, and I would turn on the TV, and it was wall-to-wall Hillary commercials. You know, here's Florida. This is the swing state to end all swing states. Wall-to-wall Hillary commercials. You go out in the countryside and it's Trump signs everywhere, but there's no Trump presence on TV. It was really weird. And then you'd go on the internet and Trump is right up to the end holding rallies of 30,000 people, right up to the end. And Hillary, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people come to her events, you know, maybe. But Trump was anyhow, so I did persuade myself and I did write the story.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that blows my mind is that Hillary – outspent him 2-1.
Yeah.
And one of the rules of Clintonism, remember this, is that the Democrats, in order to win, to become a party of winners again, they have to be able to match the Republicans dollar for dollar. And in order to match the Republicans dollar for dollar, you've got to get down on your knees before Wall Street. You've got to make nicey nice nice with the big pharma. And with Silicon Valley.
And you can be stoutly against Citizens United as you run a dark money super PAC that's spreading
yes.
fake news and disinformation
yeah.
about your opponent.
That is exactly right. And Hillary did it, and she not only matched Trump dollar for dollar, she outspent the billionaire 2-1
mm-hmm.
and still lost.
And Tom, that, sir,
is what we call in history, you know, that is a well, okay, I don't know what we call it in history, but it's a basic like repudiation of, you know, a cardinal tenet of the Clinton philosophy, okay?
And
of
in,
the philosophy in, on which we have sacrificed progressivism in the Democratic Party.
And in radio, we call this a segue where you just set me up for where I want to take the conversation next. And that is that, again, using the Perez-Ellison battle for DNC chair as the – you know, moment of focus here. what we've seen is the Democrats are committed to remaining the number two corporate party, even as the corporate donors are going to desert the Democrats because they've got game with the Republicans. They don't know how much regulation or, whether they're going to blow up the Consumer Protection Board there under Dodd-Frank, but they know they're going to get good shit out of Trump. They'll hold their noses over all of his odious policies and his personal behavior and his relentless tweeting if they can get the tax breaks they want. And Apple will be silent about everything except back doors if they can bring home their $200 billion in profits that are stashed technically offshore. And so the Democrats have only one path forward, in my opinion, and that is to rebuild on the progressive base and to, to basically reject the DLC philosophy that has controlled the party, as you have well pointed out and you document in Listen Liberal, back to the late 1980s. So, and you correctly pointed out that this is a totally failed brand. It's not just at the presidential level. They've been wiped out in state legislatures, governorships. That, of course, controls gerrymandering heading into the next decade. And even if Obama follows through with Eric Holder to try to control redistricting, I don't see gains for the progressive wing of the party. And so it's really been on a collision course, and now it's ready to blow itself up or implode.
Yep, that's right. And just to add one more pessimistic note, we live in a system where the two-party duopoly is basically locked in by law. Now, in the 19th century, we are at the kind of moment where the Democratic Party would face a challenge from outside and would probably crumble, probably collapse. You'd have a populist movement or something like that would rise up and would challenge them. But that's impossible today. The only possible challenge has to come from within the party. And of course, that allows your party regulars, the ones who control the Democratic National Committee and all that, are going to fight back. But we all know that the next battle has to be over the, as we started out this conversation saying, has to be over the institutions of the party themselves.
Mm-hmm. And you may or may not know this, but I've known Nancy Pelosi since she first went to Congress. I worked on one of her campaigns as a paid consultant once, got to know her fairly well. And I also saw her and helped support her rise into the leadership. And I believe that it is time for her to step down as the leader in the House. Now, she told us after the fact that if Hillary had won, she was planning to retire and come back to California. But she is saying that, her duty now is to confront the Trump monster. And this occurs at the same time that Hillary warns us that she's ready to come out of the woods.
And I wonder what that means. What does that even mean?
She got caught taking selfies with people when she took walks in the woods near Chappaqua. That's what that's about. At any rate, we do need a wholesale change in leadership, and the DNC struggle shows that the insiders aren't ready to face that.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for – we all have to rally together. Of course, Trump is awful, and we have to stand together against Trump. On the other hand, there has to be accountability for these people. There has to be a day of reckoning when they look at what's happened and they take responsibility for it. Now that they will resist till the end. Look, these people don't want to change. Their lives are very comfortable. Another thing, remember, Listen Liberal applies a class analysis to the Democratic Party. These people are very comfortable, Peter. And at the end of the day, they don't see any urgency to changing direction. Donald Trump isn't going to hurt them personally. He's going to cut their taxes. they don't see the urgency to it. You talk about the middle class crumbling and people in small town Missouri hurting or whatever it is. And they're like, well, those people, they should have gone to MIT. Peter, that's all it is. There's, the solutions are out there. They just need to get some student loans. And, it drives me crazy talking to these people. Never has the problem and the solution been so obvious. And yet the sort of, liberals in the American media utterly in denial. And, you know, here I am driving around the Midwest talking to groups of people, you know, 150 at a time to try to persuade them otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's it, man.
So how
that's
do you
the war.
How do you rate the Democrat as the Democrats as the opposition party just since January 20th? They picked off the nominee for Labor Secretary, the burger guy, but everybody else got confirmed. Even Ben Carson got like 90 plus votes. Has no idea what he's doing at HUD except following orders from Steve Bannon. And you know, they allowed Rexxon Tillerson, an oil man, to become our Secretary of State. And they didn't even really put up a fight, a significant fight over that one. And now this week we're seeing all the drama of the Gorsuch confirmation hearings. And there are a lot of good reasons to deny confirmation to Neil Gorsuch, but the Democrats aren't going to achieve that.
That's right. Well, they're in a minority. They it's going to be tough for them to do anything. So I'm not going to hold it against them. I mean, I was happy that they stopped the Labor nominee, but they lost. You know, they're in a tough situation. One thing I'm hopeful about, the Women's March on Washington was extraordinary. It blew my mind. I went down and I went to it. I've never seen such a crowd. In downtown Washington, it was positively claustrophobic. You know, you could not move, and it was very, very impressive. And I'm also impressed by all of these town hall meetings where people are just venting their outrage at these Republican members of Congress. There's got to be a way for the Democrats to capture that spirit, but what they seem to want to do is to capture that spirit on the getting Hillary to run again or something, or, you know, some way of denying accountability for the insiders in the party. That's all they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real goddamn shame. I mean, you know who the most popular politician in America is right now? Did you know this?
Bernie Sanders. Right.
This guy 5 years ago in Washington, you know, I interviewed him for Salon back in the day. He was regarded as a marginal figure, a crank, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And look at what's happened now. It's so great.
And at the same time, you know, how do we handle this Bernie character? Because I certainly applaud the way he ran a campaign and certainly did much better than expected. But when he, you know, rolled up the campaign and started telling his voters to support Hillary, it compromised him in ways that, you know, I find that still stick with me. And it's hard to see the populist and the kind of insider politician who does accept, and I accept what you said earlier, we are stuck with a two-party system. He really couldn't have run as an independent. There was a you know, possibility if he had jumped to the Green Party because they were on the ballot. And ballot access is the biggest barrier to independent presidential candidates. But, you know, how do we deal with Bernie with his wings clipped? Because there are limits to what he can do, and he is embracing the party. And his role as a, you know, higher profile spokesperson for it. But, you know, I still have reservations.
I understand the reservations, but I would say that, look, that's the price of admission, is that he had to endorse Hillary. That's, you know, he ran in the Democratic primary. That's the rules of the game. I don't hold that against him that he did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I voted for Hillary. I'm not ashamed of it. She'd be a better president than this guy, you know? But I think that's he's doing what he's supposed to do. Those are the stupid rules that we live under. Had he run as an independent like Ralph Nader, you know, he would have got a couple million votes, and everybody would be yelling at him and saying
spoiler.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he did what he did, and he had a much bigger impact and has set, you know, set himself up going forward to be the guy who redefines the Democratic Party. At least I hope he can do that. I mean, that's my hope.
Well, and because of his age, it's hard to imagine that he will actually be a candidate in 2020. We haven't seen anything of the Sanders nonprofit that was established last summer and that we were told was going to work to elect local progressives. Maybe they're, you know, formulating secret plans, but at this point, I don't see any legacy of the Sanders campaign in terms of deep organizing to redirect the base of the Democratic Party.
That's right, or a successor. I haven't seen that either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Hopefully, it'll all emerge in time, Mr. Collins. I'm not giving up on this yet. I mean, I'm frustrated, but for me, a lot of that is very personal because, you know, that there are certain voices in this country that just are not permitted, you know, that don't get to have anywhere close to the big microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very frustrating, but I'm more hopeful about the Democratic Party.
Well, why do you stay a Democrat? I left the Democrats 20 years ago to register as an independent. We call it no party preference here in California now. And I did re-register in order to vote for Sanders delegates to the convention and Sanders himself in the primary last year. But 2 days after the primary, I reverted to no party preference. And I don't identify with the Democratic Party, and I don't think they represent me most of the time.
Well, that's a really good question. I don't really identify with them. I mean, I'm a registered Democrat because you know, to vote in primaries. When I was younger, I was a registered Republican. So there you go.
Yeah.
But
I was going to dredge that up at some point for a little leverage on you. Now you've blown it.
But that's the only reason. Look, I'm not a party propagandist or something like that. I'm a journalist. I'm independent of these guys. I have nothing to do with them formally. By the way, one of the most interesting things of 2016 was this assumption that I encountered again and again and again, that if you were a liberal or a progressive like you and me, that your job was to produce propaganda for Hillary and against Trump.
Amen.
And I mean, people said this to me openly, and I would be like, no, I'm a journalist. We don't do that. You know, we're not part of a party organization or something. That's the whole idea of the, you know, 20th century journalism. But it's weird. People have we've turned some kind of corner in this country where everybody is aligned with some faction or other. It's very strange to me, Mr. Collins.
Well, Tom, I can enumerate that for you because I lost about 20% of my subscribers over my refusal to support Hillary Clinton. And I can identify one in particular, a guy named Gary Kane from New Jersey. And starting in March, he said, look, I support Bernie too, but you've got to tell me that you'll vote for Hillary in November. And I said, no, I'm not going to tell you that now or anytime between now and November. And so he got petulant and he would send me these flaming emails occasionally. And then he canceled his subscription. And I live this podcast is funded by the generosity of strangers, a few friends. And Gary was typical of the people who bolted. I'm happy to say that in the ensuing months, some people have returned and other new people have come in, and I'm back to about the point where I was a year ago. But I was pilloried for my refusal to support Hillary.
Huh. Well, what's funny is I did support Hillary, and I was I got that same shit, you know, because I was critical of her in my Guardian articles, and I was you know, I had one in particular that I was kind of proud of, where I used the Podesta emails. It was a great story. It's one of the best stories I've ever written. It was sort of humorous. What I did is I read a whole lot of the Podesta emails, and the thing that struck me in them was all the resumes in there that all these people were writing to Podesta asking for jobs and in some cases getting them. I don't know. I thought that was kind of amusing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people didn't like that. But look, I'm not a partisan hack. I am political. I have a political point of view, as is extremely obvious. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make me a propagandist.
Right.
You know, that doesn't make me a Pravda guy.
And even after the election, Tom, several people who are true friends of mine either posted on Facebook or sent me emails saying, you know, why did you have to hit Hillary so hard? And how do you feel about that now? Do you regret it? And they were trying to, you know, use shame after the fact. And I said, yeah. No, look, I call it as I see it. And the Clinton Foundation was a very substantive news story.
That was a real scandal. That was for real.
It was. And when I hear Bill Maher to this day, last Friday night, saying, oh, Hillary got beat because she had emails and she was a woman. Well, no. And he was doing this on his show. You've been there. You know how he typically has three people on the panel, and then in the last segment of the show, he brings out an extra guest. Well, Jake Tapper from CNN didn't go to the panel because Andrew Sullivan and Barney Frank were there. Instead, they had a separate interview table set up where Bill went to talk to Jake, and there Bill declared that, Hillary shouldn't have lost, and that it was because of the way the media handled her emails, the fake scandal of the Clinton Foundation, and the fact that she was a woman. And Tapper, of course, is not a political guy. He's not an opinion guy. So I'm not criticizing him for his lack of pushback to Maher on that. But Maher gets away with this repeatedly, where he just decrees certain things that he believes, it infuriates a viewer like me.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. By the way, in the long list of things that Hillary did wrong, and she should have won the election, by the way. That's one of the things that's so startling about it, that she was up against, her dream opponent, as we know from the emails. This was their strategy for winning the election was hope that the Republicans nominate Trump.
Yeah.
Because any of the other Republicans would have beaten her easily, you know. So she got her wish. The Republicans nominated Trump, the weakest presidential candidate this nation has ever seen, and he beat her. This is a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you know, when you want to sit down and enumerate things that went wrong, her emails were that did hurt her. But to say that the media made too big a deal of it, do you know how many newspapers endorsed her as opposed to Trump?
All of them.
It was close to unanimous.
Wasn't there one significant newspaper that went for Trump?
The New York Post, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it.
But yeah, it's there may have been one other, but everybody endorsed Hillary. And I mean, op-ed columnists in the New York Times and the Washington Post, which I read every day, were absolutely head over heels in love with Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird. She was, she was deeply unpopular with the general public. Trump was more unpopular, but she was very unpopular. Most of the Republicans figured out to keep their distance from Trump, you know, but the columnists in the American media, the American sort of opinion leaders, embraced Hillary wholeheartedly.
And their biggest flaw in their thinking there was that people at that point could be persuaded about Hillary.
The kind of persuasion they were doing, Peter, was it stank. It was.
She's got a resume. She's entitled. She, has done all these things.
Smart. That's right. She's very qualified, by the way. And she was. That's true. By the way, I wrote stories critical of Hillary, but the object in these stories was really clear. It's like, Hillary, you are screwing it up.
Mm-hmm.
You better fly right, straighten up and fly right, Hillary Clinton. The response of people to that is, you need to stop saying that.
Well, the point I was trying to make,
it's like, oh my God. Oh,
but,
well,
but see what
she lost.
What I saw in Michigan and Ohio last summer around the 4th of July that led me to predict that Trump would win is that there was nobody struggling with a decision to vote for Hillary. There were people who have voted Democratic all their lives who were struggling with voting for Trump. But it was driven by their negative opinion, a very firm one, of Hillary Clinton. And yes. despite double the spending, you know, she was unable to persuade that there were only a handful of people who were undecided about her. There were plenty of people undecided about Trump. And one of the strange phenomena that we saw in the primaries, Jeb Bush spent over $100 million trashing Trump, and particularly in Florida, it made him stronger. And that's the message.
I didn't know it was that much. Is that right?
Yes, yes. And I don't know that all of the money was in Florida, but Bush spent $100 million on negative ads about Trump. And it didn't work. If anything, it hardened support and it moved undecideds into his column.
Oh, my God. What an amazing year. What an amazing year. If we live, Peter, to write histories of this era. Oh, man. It is a crazy time to be alive. Absolutely crazy.
It truly is. And Tom, I want to close here with a quote from the very end of your afterword. You say, "Where will it all end?" And a simple answer, when the people finally come back for their party, the Democratic Party. And that's the part that we haven't really touched on and criticized. You know, we've hammered the leaders and the complacent elected officials. But it is the party of the members. And if they really want to redefine it and recover control, then this indivisible movement, I think, is an encouraging sign. It has some of the passion and the class struggle of Occupy with more of a focus and a sense of using the system to affect change as opposed to occupying some turf somewhere. So I do see these as positive signs, and clearly Trump has energized the left more than we've seen since George W. Bush.
Yeah, that's right. And that is a hopeful sign. And wouldn't it be nice if it worked out?
Well, I mean, up to a point, but you and I need things to talk about. So we don't want it to work out too fast or too well.
Yeah, that's right. It would be nice, though.
How's your Obamacare?
I'm not on Obamacare, by the way. By the way, we didn't even talk about this, but when was the last time you and I talked? It's been a while.
In November, I think. Yeah.
But I mean, one of the things that really blew up sank the Hillary Titanic was the Obamacare premium increases right on the eve of the election. What was it, 2 weeks before the election? I could not believe that. What kind of politician allows that to happen?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, And the Times recently.
By the way, the other thing, and none of the Democrats will talk about this, Obama pushing the TPP right to the end.
Yep.
Right to the end. Hillary's out there trying to persuade the public that she's seen the light and had a change of heart on trade deals, which is the number one issue. And here's Obama pushing the TPP. What the hell was he thinking? I mean, that helped. That really helped to hurt her.
It did.
To bring her down.
And even when she, you know, flipped on TPP for the benefit of the election, people didn't believe it. The way it was struck from the platform left many people thinking that she was going to flip back.
Exactly. She was not credible on this, and Obama was not helping by constantly pushing this all the time in the background. I couldn't believe he was so politically, deaf on this.
So, Tom, I'm going to wrap up now because I promised to let you go in time for your next interview. It's like speed dating, and you must be fresh for your next.
That's right. And after the next interview, you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to go to Garfield's tomb. It's here in Cleveland.
I thought you were going to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Dude. I wrote a mean essay about that like 20 years ago. I'm never going back. I'm on the permanent shit list. I'm not even allowed in.
Well, right here at the very end of the interview, I want to announce that your fine publicist, Declan, has agreed to send me 5 copies of the paperback edition of Listen Liberal, and they are going to be available to new subscribers to the Peter B. Collins podcast.
Fantastic. That's really good to hear.
And I waited till the very end so that the diehards hear it first and they can figure out.
They sat all the way through this.
Out of angle. Yeah. Hey, Tom, great to talk to you.
I'm going to be handing him out this afternoon at Garfield's tomb, too.
Okay. I'm sure my Cleveland listeners will rush right over, all 4 of them.
All right, Mr. Collins.
Thomas Frank, Listen Liberal is the book, now out in paperback. Good to talk to you, Tom.
We'll see you later.
Another rambling and frank conversation with the estimable author, Thomas Frank. Your comments are welcome. Email Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.